You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Sunday right here on KTEP. And joining us on Perspectives this afternoon is Allison Lurie. Allison is the author of 10 novels, including Foreign Affairs, which she won a Pulitzer Prize for in 1985. We're going to talk about her latest book called The Language of Houses, How Buildings Speak to Us. Allison, as busy as you are, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today.
Oh, and thank you for inviting me.
Now, as I mentioned, your latest book, The Language of Houses, when I first saw the title, I just said, well, architecture, I put it to the side, but then I started reading it, and it's very interesting. It's not what you would think the book is about. It's how buildings speak to us. And just to give the listener a quick rundown, you talk a little bit about Profiles in Courage, How I Made My Money, How We See God, Educational Aspirations, Our Inner Lives. And then throughout the book, you devote a chapter to different types of houses. So let's start a little bit with, how did you come across with the idea for this book?
Well, years ago, I wrote a book about what fashion means. And it was about what we think when we see somebody wearing a red sweater or somebody wearing a gray sweater and a gray skirt and a gray scarf. And, you know, we unconsciously think, this person is sort of down and depressed. And I, you know, it was so much fun writing this book that people said, well, you should do one for houses. And I thought so, too. But I realized it would be a much bigger job because I wanted to write about other kinds of buildings, too, and about what we think and feel when we go into a doctor's office or when we go into a grocery store and what we're supposed to think and feel. So it took me longer, and I put it aside. Then I went back to it, and the more I thought about it and the more I read it, the more interesting it was.
As far as the book goes, as I mentioned, when I first saw it, I thought it was a book strictly for, like, architects, you know, a...
Oh, no.
Not at all.
Architects don't like it very much. No, because, you know, I do make a few remarks about very modern architecture. I mean, there are now buildings being put up here and there which are like sculpture. They're beautiful objects. You look at them from the outside, like the famous new museum in Bilbao by Frank Gehry. Well, it's a beautiful shape, and from all angles, it's admirable. And if it were smaller and on a pedestal in front of a government building, you'd say, wow, isn't that wonderful? But it doesn't really work as a museum because it's got rooms that are strange shapes. And if you've got a room in a museum that comes to a point, it's very hard to look at the pictures because you can't back off far enough to see them. And so I began thinking about things like this, this is what I realized, that some architects wouldn't care for this book, but others have been very nice about it.
Now, the book itself, when it first starts out, you talk about the language of houses, and you write actually about formal and informal and simple and complex. Could you explain that, please?
Yes. A formal building tends to be what they call bilaterally symmetrical. That's a complicated phrase that means that the left half and the right half match. Most important public buildings are like this. Most churches, government buildings, they're simple in a way and formal. Because they're designed to project seriousness and importance and maybe even conservatism. So that's what makes a building serious, and yet it's simple because you can understand it very well what's going on. On the other hand, a building can be complex, because when you look at it from the outside, you don't really know what's going on inside. There's a tower here and a window there, and there's something funny going on the roof, and it so it's a more complex situation, and you really have to go inside to understand it.
Now, because we've have so many different ethnicities living in our country now, I wonder a little bit about what does the architecture say as far as different ethnicities?
Well, I think that when people first come to this country, if they can afford it, they'll look for houses that remind them of the place they came from. But people become Americans so fast, even before they become officially citizens. And I think that they'll still look for a restaurant that will serve the kind of food they grew up with. And restaurants are designed to tell people that if they want an Irish meal, they can go to an Irish pub. If they want Chinese food, the restaurant will tell them from the outside that they can find it there. So the restaurants are probably more diverse than the houses, because here in Ithaca, for instance, most of the houses are just standard American, and yet people from all over the world are living in them.
Would you agree that, and perhaps some of the architects and some of the builders might get upset at us about this, but a lot of the houses being built now, they're being built so quickly that a lot of them are basically boxes, and they all look the same.
Yes, it's like that song about the little boxes on the hillside all made out of ticky-tacky.
Yes.
Yes, I forget whose song that is. Maybe you remember. It's true. Some developers are going for speed and sameness. It's much easier to build 10 houses that all look alike than 10 that all look different. But on the other hand, it's harder to sell them to anyone who can pay more than the absolute basic cost. So I notice that even in developments, people try to distinguish. They build houses. You can get different kinds. It's the same floor plan, but out from outside, the decoration is different. So if you want to feel that you're living in a Spanish pueblo, you can get that. If you want to feel that you're living in a New England colonial house, you can get that. And it makes for more diversity, and it also, of course, tells you something about the people who have chosen this style of house.
Since we're talking about places looking the same, one of the places, or some of the places, I guess, that look a lot, regardless of what part of the country you're in, government buildings. And here, of course, we have Fort Bliss. Everything looks about the same. Things have changed since the early Fort Bliss. But a lot of the government buildings, you can tell right away it's a government building.
Yes, I think so. But you can also tell whether it's an old or a new government building. And if you look at, let's say, the United States Capitol, it's a very big, impressive building. And it has what's called a neoclassical look. That is, there are Roman arches and there are Greek columns. And unconsciously, that's supposed to remind us that this is a place in which there's law and reason and justice, and people have high ideals, and they're serious and thoughtful and good. So you get that in a lot of state capitals, this order, this kind of classical simplicity and feeling that this is a good building, good things are going to happen here. Now, of course, we know that inside some of these buildings is not like that, but that's what the building is trying to say to us.
What about the White House?
Well, the White House is interesting because it's a little bit like the Capitol. It's got the pillars, but it doesn't have the arches. And so it's a house. It's a very, very large house. And it's the same from the front and the back, whereas most private houses, front may be symmetrical, especially if you've got a colonial type of house. But you go around the back, and there's a terrace here and a porch there and an extra door there. So it tells us that the public life and the private life are different, and we accept that. We prefer that. Most of us wouldn't want to live in a modern colonial house in which the back was exactly like the front, with a door in the middle and windows on both sides and nowhere to sit and nowhere to have a barbecue. But with public buildings, the front and the back usually match, and that's to reinforce the idea that this is a serious, orderly, important place.
We are visiting with Allison Lurie. Allison is the recent author of The Language of Houses, How Buildings Speak to Us. She is also the Pulitzer Prize winner of Foreign Affairs in 1985. Allison, since we're talking about the White House, let's talk a little bit about some of the different chapters. One of the ones that I want to talk about first is Profiles in Courage.
Well, I think what happens is that Stone has prestige in our society because it's more expensive, it's much more durable. So if you want to build something that looks serious and important and eternal, you will go for stone, or if you can afford it, for marble or granite, the strongest kinds of stone. And if you don't have quite as much money, then you go for brick. A brick is solid, but brick lasts, though not as long as stone. And finally, if you don't have that kind of budget, you'll build in wood. And, of course, it depends partly on where you're building, because if it's the northern half of the United States, there's plenty of trees, so wood is cheap. But down where you are, wood is not cheap. There are not enough pine trees. So there you'll have concrete and stucco, and the standard house will be made of local materials. It will match the landscape, whereas a New England Cape Cod cottage would look sort of peculiar in El Paso. You look and you think, well, what's going on here? These people had to move here from Maine, but they want to go back. So I think it depends a lot on where the building is and what it's doing.
Since you mentioned El Paso, you did a little bit of research on El Paso and some of our architecture at the university and also downtown. So what do you think, Allison?
Well, I think it's beautifully adapted to the landscape, the desert, the mountains. It looks wonderful. And as probably most of you know, the University of Texas at El Paso is based on the Asian country of Bhutan. It was founded as the Texas State School of Mines, and there's a connection now to the actual Bhutan. I know that artists and performers come here from there, and they'll feel right at home because they've got buildings with the same pale, massive, sloping walls and the red tile roofs and the square towers. It's the look of a mountain kingdom, which in a way El Paso is like Bhutan.
Now, what about downtown? Because we also have some buildings still standing downtown where Pancho Villa met to do some strategy on the Mexican Revolution. We also have some buildings where President Kennedy stayed when he was planning the Texas trip. Also, where Presidents Taft and Diaz met before a private meeting.
Yes. Well, you have some wonderful old buildings downtown and in several different styles. Some are very mid-19th century. Some are modern. They tend to go for the light colors and expanses of glass that you get in warm climates where you don't have to shelter against the storm so much. You don't have to hide against freezing temperatures. So you can have bigger windows. You can have a more open look. And I think that's what you've got there. You've got a lot of tall, beautiful buildings there, it's a lovely downtown. I like the parks, too, and I was just talking about your alligator fountain. I thought, wow, this is interesting. Three huge alligators, and I looked it up, and I discovered there used to be real alligators in a pool right there, and eventually they weren't doing too well, so they moved them to the zoo, but people missed them, and so they put up the fountain with these three huge alligators who actually, if you look at them, they're smiling, they're cheerful. Of course, they're also dangerous, but I think there's a way in which El Paso has that feeling. It's a city where you can have a good time, but it's also maybe not the safest place in the world because it's so near to Mexico.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that because El Paso has been listed as one of the safest cities, yet right across the border in Mexico, as you mentioned, has been labeled as one of the most dangerous cities in the world.
You're right. Yes, I read about that, which means that you have a very good government which takes care of its citizens and doesn't let danger into the city. So I congratulate you.
Well, thank you. You know, you mentioned downtown. Henry Trost was one of the major architects for downtown. But very little people know that down the road near Anthony, Texas, New Mexico, there's a federal prison there named La Tuna. And it was designed by Henry Trost, but it does not look like a prison at all, whatever you imagine a prison to look like, because it looks like a church. It's white, it's beautiful, and people who see it as they're driving down the interstate not realizing that it's a federal prison.
Wow, I didn't come across it as I was going through photographs of El Paso. I'll have to look it up. But that's a very interesting thing. Of course, people don't like to live near a prison. So if you're developing a city, if you want to build homes or stores or offices, you'd be happier if the prison that was nearby didn't look like a prison.
We're visiting with Allison Lurie. Allison is the author of The Language of Houses, How Buildings Speak to Us. And Allison's book tells us a little bit about what houses tell us, what buildings tell us, where do you live? And one of those is how we see God. And a lot of times now we're starting to see churches that are mega churches, and you're wondering if you're going into a church, a house of worship, or if you're going into a Las Vegas production house.
Well, I wouldn't say a Las Vegas casino, no.
No, not casino.
I don't know what a production house is, like a film studio, maybe. Yeah.
There you go.
Well, I think, you know, people speak of churches as the house of God.
Yes, ma'am.
And I ask myself, well, if this is the house of God, what kind of a God would live in this building? And, of course, the first thing you know is that God is tall. God is large. God loves beautiful buildings, and he likes peace and quiet and a nice view. He loves music and art. So you begin to think that, yes, this is one aspect of if you look at a beautiful old Catholic church, you have in El Paso a really spectacular old Catholic church, and the God who lives there has many friends and relatives, and he loves music and light and candles and parties, processions, whereas if you go to the local Quaker meeting house, you'll find a room that's almost empty except for chairs or benches arranged around an empty central space. And in such a building is saying, God is spiritual. God is not visible. We can't really imagine him. He is a presence, he is a spirit, but we don't think of him as having human form. We don't think of him as wanting to listen to hymns or smell incense. He's an abstract concept. So different churches will tell us that the people who go to them have a different idea of God. Of course, the megachurch is telling us that God is everywhere. The megachurch will have a school. It will may have all kinds of offices, and it'll have facilities for barbecues and parties and picnics and it'll have offices to counsel people. It'll have rooms for Bible study groups and even sometimes stores. So what you're getting here is the idea that God is everywhere. He's not just in a single building which you go to on Sunday. He's in the school. He's in the office. He's in the library. He's everywhere. So I think that's what a megachurch is telling us.
One of the things that we were talking before we started the interview, I was talking to one of my colleagues here, and he said, you know, one of the places that I just can't stand going into is a hospital.
Yeah. Yes. I think everybody feels that to some extent. The experiences you have in a hospital are generally bad ones. But there's an exception. If you go into a maternity ward, all of a sudden, it's light and cheerful, and everyone seems happy. It's because people are being born rather than dying. And if hospitals have tried very hard to make the rest of the building tell us that what happens here is not that you die, but that you get well. And there have been lots of studies about how a hospital room should look, and there have been lots of changes. We no longer have huge wards with rows of beds in which people are lying groaning. Now people have their own rooms. They've discovered that if you can see out, you get well faster. They actually took groups of people and just randomly put some of them in rooms with windows and some in rooms without. The ones in the rooms with the windows got better twice as fast because they could still see the outer world. They could see nature. And they felt better.
It's interesting, as you bring that up, I heard a pastor tell a story one time, Pastor Chuck Swindoll from Dallas, how he was in a hospital, and he kept hearing his roommate talking about the beautiful park outside and all the really neat things he could see. And he was envious because all he had was a painting next to him. And so when the gentleman was discharged, he said, I want to be moved over there, to find out that there was no window. There was just a wall, and this man just kept saying that to keep himself sane.
Wow. Or perhaps he actually had dementia.
Yes,
and
yes.
And he was seeing a beautiful landscape.
Yes. One of the things that stands out from your book also is about, because Christmas is just around the corner, and those are shopping environments, malls. In your book, you say that the environment screams save, but what they really meant is spend.
Yes. Well, when you see a sign that says save, 2 for 1. Well, you're going to end up, it's two, you do save a little money. If you were planning to get two chickens, then you're saving money. But if you weren't, what you've got is an extra chicken. What are you going to do with it? You have to have a party. Well, if you're going to have a party, you have to buy more food. You have to go back and save, i.e. spend more. So that's how it works. And supermarkets think about these things all the time. And that's why, for instance, they put the milk and the eggs in the back corner of the supermarket. So you have to walk past a whole lot of things you don't need to get what you really do need.
Finally, Allison, one of my favorite buildings. Tell us about libraries.
Well, you know, I don't know if you have one of those Carnegie libraries in El Paso, but in the 19th century, Andrew Carnegie founded libraries in towns all over the United States, and they always looked the same. They had big pillars and a big front door in the center, and they were built of stone, and they were telling us that books are wonderful, books are important, books will make you strong, and they tended to have big windows, let in a lot of light. That's what we had and what many towns still have. I mean, you think of the public library in New York with the two stone lions in front of it guarding it. That's a beautiful building. Now, unfortunately, some contemporary libraries don't look like much. They look a little bit like office buildings.
Yes.
They're square. They're made of brick. You go in, and to get to the books, you have to pass through a lot of computers and a lot of just space. Our new public library here, you really have to walk about a block to get to the mystery stories. It's the opposite of the supermarket. It's sort of like they don't want us to get to the mystery stories. We should stay up front and read something more serious and improving.
Well, Allison, thank you very much for being with us today. We've been visiting with Allison Lurie. She is the author of The Language of Houses, How Buildings Speak to Us. And I'm sure that you can find it online. You can find it at Amazon, any of your bookstores that you frequent. And the name of the book, again, is The Language of Houses by Allison Lurie. That is 1L, A-L-I-S-O-N, Lurie, L-U-R-I-E. And do you have a webpage that people can go to, Allison?
Yes, you can go to Allison Lurie. Type it in Google, you'll find it.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being with us. And again, as busy as you are, thank you so much for making time to visit with us.
And thank you for asking such wonderful questions.
Thank you. We've been visiting with Allison Lurie, The Language of Houses, How Buildings Speak to Us.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes all the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university, where they were put in boxes, and they came out all the same. And there's doctors and lawyers and business executives, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And they all play on the golf course and drink their martinis dry, and they all have pretty children, and the children go to school, and the children go to summer camp, and then to the university, where they are put in boxes, and they all look just the same.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.